Welcome to Safe and Sound, New Zealand's only animal rights radio show, broadcasting from Free FM 89.0 and via access stations right across the country. My name's Sandra Kyle, and it's my pleasure to bring you two interviews today. In the first, Sarah Oliver asks Jasmine Gray about the recent animal rights conference in Wellington that she helped to organise. And in the second, I speak with Nicola Creek, Education Officer for Save Animals from Exploitation, SAFE. We'll speak about the latest in her groundbreaking series of school textbooks, Animals and Us. But first, Jasmine Gray.
I'm speaking to Jasmine Gray, who is one of the organisers of last week's Animal Rights Conference in Wainui Omata. Hi Jasmine, how did the conference go?
It was excellent. So we had about 90 people come from all around the country and we all stayed on site for the whole weekend. And yeah, it was great. We've had some really good feedback.
So it was a two-day conference and you had some high-profile speakers, including Mojo Mathers and Mike Joy, and lots of workshops. So can you tell us a little bit about the highlights for you and for your attendees?
I think Mike Joy was definitely a highlight for a lot of people, and he came and spoke about the dairy industry and the impact that that's having on the environment and how we can work together, environmental movement and animal rights movement, which I think was quite exciting for people. And also hearing Mojo talk to us about health, animal rights and our campaigns that we do are kind of perceived from the parliamentary side of it, and how we could maybe change what we do a little bit to maybe resonate a bit more with politicians, which I think was really helpful for a lot of people because we often don't know how we come across to policymakers and stuff like that. And we also had a speaker come over from the United States called Jake Conroy, who everybody loved, and he was one of the Shack 7, so he was involved in the campaign against Huntington Life Sciences in the 2000s, which was an animal testing facility, and his role in organising protests and stuff. Yeah, he ended up going to jail for nearly 4 years as part of that, so he came and spoke about that experience and about campaigning and the need for us to work together within the movement better and also with other movements, which people really seem to enjoy his talks.
Fantastic, because it seems to be something that people are saying, the need for us to start really working together. So obviously he highlighted that. What kind of workshops did you run?
We had three themes of workshops. So usually lots of the animal rights conferences have had workshops, say, about different types of animal abuse and that kind of thing. And this time we wanted to do something different. So we had skills workshops around campaign strategies and messaging and that type of stuff. And then we had some workshops around movement building, so a lot around self-care and burnout and how we interact with each other in groups, and also around how we build a really broad-based movement. And then we've had some theory-based ones, so about, say, abolitionist sort of approaches to campaigning, and then some that are maybe more focused on animal rights and animal welfare. So there was quite a lot of things for people to think about in terms of how they do their work and sort of skills that they need and how they work with other groups. And we had a workshop about intersectionality, so how the oppression that animals face is linked with the oppression of women and the queer community and that sort of stuff, and the need for us to work together with them to sort of just fight inequality in general.
So it sounds like lots of different speakers and skills were brought into the conference to present. A lot of work behind the scenes then to make that sort of thing happen. Hope you guys all had a good break afterwards.
Yeah, it was a bit of work, but often the animal rights conferences have said in a lot of the same stuff, so we wanted to do things a little bit different, and it was quite good. On the last day, we had some people come to us and say that they had thought that they might not come because it would be the same as every other time, and that they had come away with a lot of different things to think about and stuff like that. So it was good to kind of offer some of the older people who have been involved a bit longer something new to think about as well.
That's great feedback to receive after that. That's fantastic. Yeah. And did you have a sense yourself that the animal rights in New Zealand, the work is I guess, alive and happening? There's lots of people with passion at the moment?
Definitely, because the last conference was in Wellington in 2013. So in the last 3 years, there's been a lot of new faces in the animal rights movement, and it was quite awesome going to the conference and through the bookings list and stuff and realising that you didn't know half the people. So these are kind of like new people that have just come into the movement, which is really awesome. I think everyone, whether they're new or older, has kind of gone away with a bit of new inspiration and maybe a bit more commitment to each other, because we had that time to talk and get to see what everyone else is doing and where we can work together and that sort of stuff.
And of course, vegan conference, animal rights conference. What was the food like?
The food was delicious. We've got a really great team of people down here who are quite used to catering sort of vegan conferences and dinners and things like that. Yep. So they're mostly from the New Zealand Vegan Society. So that was great. There was definitely no shortage of food. And we had a chef come and he did Saturday's food, which was delicious. And everyone took turns as well, helping improve them in the kitchen and stuff like that. So we all took responsibility for making it happen. It was great.
And I'm going to throw a question at you. Future conferences, where do you think we'll be at? Or is it too soon? You want to have a little break first, I probably imagine.
No, we were thinking about that. It's definitely been a long time since there's been one in Christchurch. And so maybe trying to get something happening in the South Island would be really good in the next couple of years. So we will see. One of the other organisers, so there was myself, Stephen and Mark, and Marky has been involved in organising all the animal rights conferences over the last 15 years. So it was really good having his wisdom on board, and no doubt he'll be there to help the next one. One thing I think that was really fabulous about this conference, we had some kids there as well who have been all raised vegan, and they also were quite involved and had a bit of feedback at the end about the signs they wanted to make for future protests and that sort of stuff. And it's good to see that that's going to be the future of our movement, and they're already really invested in doing good things for animals, which is awesome.
Hey, look, lovely to talk to you today. Thanks so much, and good luck with the future.
Our thanks to Jasmine and Sarah. It really is very encouraging that this movement is so vibrant and growing in New Zealand. I was quite interested to hear that the topic of burnout was discussed at the conference, and I know that can be quite a common thing amongst animal activists. Ah, it sounds like a very positive conference, and all of the changes that are taking place as a result of the growth in the animal rights movement will no doubt reflect cultural changes that spell out very good news for the billions of suffering animals in the world's production system. Speaking of which, we now have our second interview with Nicola Craig. Nicola is a marvellous educator, and if you're a teacher of years 9 to 13 and you don't know her books, then I suggest you listen up. I have her latest book in my hands right now, Animals in Factory Farms, and I'd like to read out part of the introduction by distinguished scholar Dr. Annie Potts, co-director of the Centre for Human-Animal Studies at the University of Canterbury. When we examine the ways in which an animal is made edible and learn about what has been disguised or trivialised in the production of meat, we're freer to make informed choices about what and how we consume. It's exciting to know that students coming from secondary schools to our 100-level courses at the University of Canterbury may already have engaged in compassionate learning if they have studied this resource or any of the Animals and Us series. I began by telling Nicola that as a child I didn't even know that when I was eating meat, I was eating animals. When I was a youngster, I, of course, was eating meat and three veggies growing up in the 50s and the 60s. And so I was having chicken and lamb, but I was a teenager before I actually put two and two together, before I realised that what I was eating had once been a living animal. And I don't know if it's because I'm just sort of thicker than most.
You're probably the norm. I think society, we're indoctrinated from a very young age that it's perfectly normal to eat the flesh of another being. And it's not until we get a little bit older that we make that connection. Obviously, some people think of it much, much earlier, or some young people. But
farm children would have a better idea than someone brought up in a city like myself. For the sake of our listeners, just tell us the titles in the rest of the series, the four books that you've completed. I think the first one was launched in 2007.
That's right. So the first textbook was Battery Hen Farming in New Zealand. So that, again, was about factory farming. Mm-hmm. And that textbook was a pilot, really, for the series, because we weren't really sure, you know, it was the first time we'd done something like this, how it would be received by schools. We picked that topic specifically because it was a very well-known animal rights or animal welfare topic that we thought people and teachers would engage with, and they did, and it was very popular. And it was only for English, that first textbook. The second textbook is called Animal Rights, Human Values, Social Action, and that's a social studies textbook which looks at animal rights as a social justice movement in particular. And the third textbook is called Animals on Show. That textbook looks at animals in captivity, particularly for entertainment purposes. It looks at circuses, rodeo, and zoo. The fourth textbook, Animals and Science, is a science textbook, science and biology, and it looks specifically at animal experimentation. And the last textbook, of course, Animals and Factory Farming, goes back to factory farming, but this time we're looking at not just battery hens, but pigs and also meat, chickens that are reared for meat.
I have your four other books at home, and I was looking through them last night. They're really very beautifully produced books, and I was looking through the Animals and Science one, and there's a large illustration of the heart, and the student was asked to label the heart, and of course you can't help as a child sort of make the connection when you realise that the human heart and the animal heart are actually very similar. We're built on a common plan, and doing something like that I think is extremely valuable. I used to have some very favourite textbooks. These were the ones that combined wonderful knowledge and exciting, inspiring content with design and pictures, and just sort of full of information and lovely to look at and lovely to hold. And I really feel that your textbooks are like that.
Oh, thank you. I have thought a lot about not just the content, of course, which is very important, but the presentation, because you want to pick it up and use it, hopefully, because it's sort of a palatable resource. And it's got to be easy to use, it's got to make sense, and it's also got to be relevant to whatever subject you're teaching. There's quite a lot of things to think about, actually, because it is tailored to the New Zealand curriculum. I realised that I could just produce a textbook that I like, but that doesn't mean that teachers are going to use it, because
yes,
they're very restricted by the curriculum and what
NCEA.
The objectives are that they have to teach. Yeah.
Yes, you have to be very familiar with the NCEA framework in order to be able to produce texts.
Absolutely, Yeah, I did train as a secondary school teacher, but that was before NCEA was in place.
Right.
However, I obviously made a big effort to become very familiar with NCEA and the achievement standards that teachers are working with. Whenever I put a textbook together, I take a look at what's called a matrix for each subject, which of the achievement standards most fit with the type of information we might be able to offer. So I do really spend a lot of time working within the structure that teachers are already familiar with, because I, as a teacher, and you yourself are a teacher, I know how busy teachers are, and they need as much support as they can. If it's not easy for them to use and easy for them to incorporate, I don't think they'll use it.
Yes. So 2007, that's 10 years. It takes, a couple of years to prepare a book on average?
Yes. Well, the first three textbooks only took me about 18 months each, but that was because I didn't do it alone. I was very fortunate to have the help of Professor Philip Armstrong from the New Zealand Centre for Human Animal Studies, and he's a professor of English at the University of Canterbury, and he helped me with the first three textbooks. He was on the board of SAFE at that time, so when I sat down with him and talked about my ideas for producing textbooks, really I was so lucky to have him to work with, and because he was able to help me a lot with production of those first three textbooks, it didn't take as long. But then the fourth book quite a lot longer, partly because he was unable to help with that one, and partly because of the earthquakes here in Christchurch, which kind of derailed my progress for a little while. So that one took 3 years.
Right.
And this one took about two, and I was also having to work on other things, of course. I don't only work on the text.
No. We'll get on to the latest book shortly, but they're cross-disciplinary. You mentioned social studies and science and English. Are they in every secondary school? What are the statistics?
They are multidisciplinary, that's correct. Not all of them. This new one is multidisciplinary, so it looks at English, social studies and science and biology. We do a print run big enough to be able to send around 12 copies of each textbook to every secondary school in New Zealand. I do look at the school roll, and if the school's very small, I might only send them six. And if the school's very large, like, for example, Rangitoto College, which is a very, very large school, I'll send them maybe 24 on that. Yeah, so basically every school librarian was sent a set of the textbooks and asked if they would, because it's multidisciplinary, I just simply asked them if they could share them with the departments who would be most interested. And funnily enough, the new textbook was also of interest to food technology, well, I should have realised, because they are interested. You know, I know that they think of the animals as food, but of course I haven't thought of them as food for a while,
no.
for a very long time.
You mentioned that I'm also a teacher, and I feel that I'm somewhat apt to judge the educational value of the books, and I really do think that your insight and experience as an educator really is quite obvious, because so much of it is not only informing, sort of teaching them how to conduct research, to think critically, all of those very important factors. And your books have all of these elements and a lot of material there to inspire them and make them think about where their food really does come from.
Yeah, well, I think I'm very fortunate to have kind of started working on these. I mean, obviously, I kind of spend a lot of time doing research, and there's a huge, huge wealth of information now out there. The field of human-animal study has really, really grown incredibly
yes.
in the last decade,
yes.
and there are some scholars out there and philosophers who are producing amazing materials, and I'm very fortunate that they often allow me to reproduce them for very little cost, or because it's an educational document, I'm able to get a relatively low copyright and for educational purposes. So yeah. One of my biggest problems with creating these textbooks is editing down to the most relevant
yes,
material.
There's so much material.
Because there is a lot of really great stuff out there. Any student or teacher who is trying to find the best information about a certain topic, they can spend hours and hours and hours doing the research themselves. But what I'm endeavouring to do is give them the best of the research
yes.
that there is, or the best of the, whether it's a book or a journal extract or a newspaper article or a blog, whatever. And in terms of animal rights, anyway, these are the most cutting-edge academics that I'm providing them with.
As you mentioned, the field of animal rights has really come along enormously, but I'm just wondering how that may have affected the books you've already written. Is there any chance of them getting out of date?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that I'm always very conscious of, like the second textbook, Animal Rights, Human Values, Social Action. That's been hugely popular, actually. I don't have any of it left, and I'm constantly getting requests from teachers for copies of it, but I'm uncomfortable to reproduce it without updating it. One thing I'm working on at the moment is a database. So in order to make the textbooks even more accessible, I'm trying to create a database and put all the materials and lessons online in a better way. They are on our website, but I'm creating a slightly more user-friendly portal for teachers and students. And the good thing about that is I can put up what we've already done, but I should be able to add new materials as well.
Yes.
Area. So
it's much easier and much more convenient. So factory farming, what are the conditions that factory farmed animals endure? Now, presumably you've talked about the broiler hens and the layer hens and pigs. Is that right?
I have focused on pigs, the chickens raised for meat and chickens reared for laying eggs, mainly because it's difficult to include everything in here. And there were key things I really wanted to be able to include as lessons. One of the first lessons looked at the success we had with banning sow stalls in New Zealand. So it's a social studies lesson. It really is an opportunity for young people to look at how successfully we managed to change legislation in order to help animals, and what that campaign entailed, and what kinds of elements it took to create that successful outcome for pigs. I really wanted to do a lesson on chickens reared for meat, because no other animal in the world suffers as much as a chicken that's reared for meat in such great numbers. In New Zealand alone, 100 million chickens are reared for meat. That is more than any other animal in New Zealand, and nobody sees them. And the selective breeding, of course, causes such pain and suffering to these animals. They've got such short lives, only 6 weeks.
Yes.
I really, really wanted to make sure that that was part of the textbooks, that topic. I wanted to go back to layer hens, because even though battery hen cages are going to be banned from 2022, they're going to be replaced by another form of cage, which is the colony cage.
Yes, yes.
And that's really important that young people understand that this cage is coming in.
They're not much
what
better.
Kind of, No, so that's an ethology lesson, a behaviour lesson, where they have a look at what kinds of restrictions and deprivations the colony cage is going to create for those animals.
They'll suffer from overcrowding, their beaks mutilated to stop them from harming their cellmates out of sheer frustration. They'll be killed at 18 months or a couple of years. They'll also suffer from genetic problems. And, of course, all their brothers will be killed on their first day of life. It's a horror story.
Exactly. So I wanted to go back to that topic. We're obviously still working very hard to stop colony cages from being established. And then the English lesson really just looks at an overview of factory farming. And looking at animals as sentient beings, I think it's really important to recognise that these are not
They're not a thing.
No.
Someone, not something.
And so just with those four lessons, I was already jam-packed. I unfortunately couldn't include many other issues, because there are other types of factory farming. But
you're not emotional in the way you put forward the facts, and everything's done in a very informative way and a way that encourages critical thinking. But do you think that some of the young people might be a bit upset to read about what actually happens in these places?
I must admit that was very much on my mind with the fourth textbook, because some of the footage, animal experimentation footage that I'd put into the textbook was upsetting. And even for me, who's sort of a hardened animal rights activist who's seen this kind of thing for 20 years. So we had to put a rating on that textbook, actually, on the DVD in particular. This textbook, there's nothing in there, I don't think, that needed a trigger warning, in the sense that I think most young people, and we're mainly these lessons are for year 11, 12, 13, which means that they're 14, 15, 16. They're slightly older children or young people. So hopefully they will cope. But I was careful not to put anything that was going to cause...
Nothing too graphic.
No, very careful about that. The imagery, a lot of the imagery was filmed by FarmWatch and the photos. So I'm incredibly grateful to them for supplying those kind of images. And I'm very careful about what kind of imagery I also use. Of course, a lot of it is very unsettling. Well, it's sad.
It's sad to see.
And disturbing, but hopefully not to the point where it will.
There is a sense of optimism as well, that things are changing. Do you concentrate on positive changes and engender a sense of, oh, you know, we can do something about this? We can change
That's why I wanted to put that lesson in about the success we had with the banning of the sow stalls, because one of the things that's also quite important, I think, is showing that people can make a difference for animals, that together we can really help these animals, and that was an example of success. So I think it's very important to make sure that there is a feeling of empowerment of what you can do, that one person can make a difference, even if it's just for one animal. They may or may not have consumed after learning about these sorts of things. So I think it is very important to make sure that young people recognise that there's a different way of doing things. And one of the things that I also is important, and it's part of the New Zealand curriculum, is looking and exploring values. And I think that this is an opportunity for young people to look at their own values and the values of others, and think about, how do I relate to this issue and this topic?
Empathy as well, realising that these creatures are sentient. They feel pain, they feel fear, they feel loneliness, and all of that. And if our young people are able to empathise, then I think that bodes well for our future.
At the launch, actually, of the textbook, I invited students from Epsom Girls Grammar and Auckland Grammar who have an animal rights group. There were 100 members in their animal rights group.
Wow.
And 10 of them came to help at the launch, and they were absolutely amazing young people who have such a passion for animals and animal rights and doing something. And they're not the only animal rights group at schools. I've just heard of another one in Paraparaumu College, who has 50 members in their animal rights group. So these young people are already taking action. They're making a difference. They're getting together. They're doing what they can to help animals. And these kind of textbooks hopefully will support young people like that to feel like, oh, this isn't just a random, I'm not just a random person with a random idea about why it's important to protect animals or why animals matter. There are materials to back up the way they think.
Of course. So what do you say to any teachers, educators who are listening in today and want to know more?
Well, certainly they can get in touch with me if they're interested in learning more about the program. They can have a look at our website, safe.org.nz, and we've got an education section and the textbooks are all available there. Obviously, I'm working at making it easier for teachers in particular to access the materials and students, but they can order the textbooks from me or on the website. And I have actually found since this last textbook went out that a lot of schools are contacting me wanting all the other textbooks.
That's brilliant.
So, because the textbooks have been around for so long, some of them are not on the shelves anymore. Yes. I'm happy to supply those.
Nicola, you've done just a magnificent job with the Animals and Us series, and I hope that this latest one is just as popular, even more popular than all the others. And thank you very much. Are you coming to a bit of a hiatus at the moment, or are you devising another kind plan?
Well, actually, with our new CEO, Yasmin Dabou, she has a very strong background in education, humane education herself. So she has recommended, and I fully support her, that we do an evaluation of the series. It's been 10 years. We want to talk to teachers, and we want to talk to students and past students and see, have these materials helped shape or change your attitude and values towards animals?
Yes.
What way have they supported your teaching? In what ways have they actually worked within the classroom and within school? So
that's
what we're actually going to be doing this year.
Oh, that's lovely. It's been wonderful talking to you, Nicola. You take care, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, all the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you to both our guests today and to Sarah. I hope you enjoyed the program, and I'd just like to say before we close that we've been thinking about the people who have suffered as a result of the floods in recent days. And of course, our hearts go out to the animals too, the stock and domestic pets, some of whom have lost their lives. I do hope you can join us again at this time next week. In meantime, go well. Bye-bye.